Just a couple throws that he'd like to have back.
Kevin Stefanski's going for the knockout punch, fourth and inches.
Greetings and welcome to the Fourth and Inches podcast with your hosts, Stuart Love, Sukhdeep Pooney, Ryan Edwardson, and Alex Grazier.
Greetings and welcome to a special edition of the Fourth and Inches podcast. I'm your host, Sukhdeep Pooney, and today we've got another special edition. As I say, today we're going to be talking about a team from the AFC East, and I know a lot of you fans have been looking forward to this. So we bring you the Miami Dolphins, and we have two very special guests on today, so very much excited to have them on. So first of all, we have Martin Lydon. How are you doing, Martin?
Good, thanks, you.
Very good, thank you. And we also have Tom Kavanagh. How are you doing, Tom?
Great, man. It's great to be here. Thanks for.
I appreciate that. Thanks for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it. So this is one team that I've been really excited, and I know I say that about a number of the franchises we do, but honestly, with the Miami Dolphins, it's something that I have been looking forward to discussing because they're very much a team who we say are on the upward trajectory, you know, in the NFL. You look at, obviously, the way the NFC East was last year. You know, the Dolphins, I believe, you know, they had a 10-6 record, you know, which from where they stand on previous seasons, you know, it's a very much definitely a forward step for the team, you know, under Brian Flores. Martin, tell us about the season. Obviously, there was a lot of change midway through the season, which we'll get into. But what were your sort of thoughts going into last season, you know, with COVID and everything? Did you think the Dolphins would have had a positive season like they did, or were you expecting a lot more sort of struggles?
I think it was about average. I think it was where, if anything, sorry, a little bit above average than where we're expected to be. Yes. Obviously, with King Tua coming in, as far as I'm concerned, as Tua coming in and, you know, sitting behind Fitz for another year, we could see what the plan was, and it just seems like, you know, everybody who's following the Dolphins and follows them quite closely will follow the process. Everybody is trusting Coach Flores. They're trusting him to do. It's weird. It's not, how can I put it? I don't want to call it like a certain team up in the Northeast, but it's very much that way of doing things. We're building slowly. We're building it. We're putting weapons in. But as the season goes, last year I was pretty happy. I mean, you know, we were still in the mix coming towards the end. You know, 10-6 season. It's better than it's been in the past, and it's exciting. It's exciting, especially as I say. It's a shame that we've lost Fitz, but I understand what he wants to do. But what an asset to the Miami Dolphins! What an asset.
Yeah.
Compared to some cutbacks in the past. But yeah, really happy. Happy where we are. Happy what we're doing.
Yeah, 100%. And like you say, Fitzmagic. I mean, I think whichever organisation he's been to, there's been that what love and warmth. And I know myself personally, being a Bucks fan, you know, I very much appreciated Fitzmagic during his small time there more than I sort of appreciated someone like Jameis Winston as an example. So it just goes to show the effect he can have on an organization, even, you know, coming in as, you know, potential, you know, sort of backup, will be a starter, but then potentially lose your job kind of, you know, role. You're going to get that with Fitzmagic. But he's a sport for obviously taking on. He's under no illusions, is he? Especially when, you know, you draft Tua obviously so early. Tom, just going into the season, so obviously you started, you know, 3-3. You had some very close games. I mean, the first two games, obviously, you lost to the Patriots, you know, which 10-point difference. You had the close game with the Bills, so you 0-2. But then you sort of came back in and you beat the Jags, and then you went on a bit of a run. And then suddenly at 3-3, you know, you go on your bye week, and then the Dolphins obviously do make that decision to put Tour in. And obviously those of you who listen to the podcast know that I was dead against this, thinking that, you know, you boys had a chance to sort of get into, you know, playoff contention. Why do you think that decision was made, and did you agree with that decision?
Yeah, I think, I mean, at the time, it probably did seem a bit odd to outside people. I think Sean Martin had said the same thing. I think a lot of fans, I'm not sure if we were shocked by it. I think the plan is always that after the bye week, it'd be turned over to Tour. But I think the issue was that the bye week got moved forwards. Like, I can't exactly remember when it was supposed to be. If it was week, like, 10 or 11, was meant to be the bye for us that year.
Yeah, it was something like that. I can't remember exactly, but...
Yeah, and then it got moved forward, and they stuck with the plan. Like, that bye week was the week when it was transitioned over that Tour was going to take the keys. And as you say, we didn't have a bad start. I mean, we lost that Patriots game, which there's no shame in it. You know, the Patriots had, there was no tape on that team. They had all new wrinkles and new, you know, no one really knew what to expect from that team. And they ran all over us, and run defense was something we desperately needed to work on and did get better on as the season went on. Yeah. The Bills, again, as they showed that year, what was it, 13 wins? But for a Hail Mary, it was against the Cardinals, it was a 14-win season for them. Josh Allen was MVP level. You know, that's a team we've got to figure out how to beat going forward. You know, they've had our number since Flores and before. Yeah. And then obviously the Seahawks game was so close. We were, you know, kind of so close to turning that one around. Jags on Thursday Night Football was, you know, kind of the first big win for us. And then, as you say, went on a bit of a run. It's difficult for anyone to complain about the Tour situation, having him come in, and obviously he didn't beat the Rams, but the team, it's a, you know, a special team to defense, was doing such an incredible job. And I think everyone knew it was coming. And as much as I'm an absolutely Fitzmagic lover, like he was a hero to me. I think, you know, what he did for the franchise, as Martin said, he's someone I'll never forget. He was only there for a short time, but he just brought fun back. It'd been 20 years of just drudgery, and God, even more recent, just, the, you know, Philbin and Gase, and God, those 5-6 years were just misery, yeah. You know, and it was, you know, apart from a glimmer of hope with Tony Sperano, what had we had for those 10 years or something, you know? Yeah. So yeah, Fitz was just fun. And that was what we needed at that point. And, you know, Flores getting that team to a five win season, that 2019. And then, you know, personally, I was just looking for improvement, and to double our win totals was incredible. You know, that was my view on the season, really, was that personally, I think we went well above what I was hoping for, 6-7 wins, and to get 10 and only miss out on the playoffs, you know, a 10-16 missing out on the playoffs was remarkable enough, I know. Yeah. And obviously we were all disappointed, but to have been at that point is just incredible.
Exactly. You brought it all back now, and you just mentioned Philbin. I just can't help but think about him in that meeting room with Ocho.
Do you remember him on Hard Knocks, Nicky? Yeah. They're picking up the bits off the field. He wasn't even coaching. He was just going around picking bits up off the field.
It was just strange. And even the whole how he dealt with Ocho Cinco, it felt like he was talking to, like, I can't even describe it, but it was just really, really bizarre.
But it was just the fact that the Dolphins didn't learn their lesson. They went out for Philbin because they wanted this offensive guru. It didn't work, and they went, oh no, let's go for Adam Gase. And then again, it's just this Peyton Manning's word, this QB guru. And then it's like, only now they've realized actually what we need is the CEO type, which a lot of teams seem to be following now. And all of a sudden, you look at how it's turned around.
Yeah, I mean, teams are still getting it wrong with Gase. I mean, obviously, you look at the Jets giving him a chance, and that's just,
yeah, it was great.
Absolutely remarkable. Like, you know, didn't realize if he was still with the Dolphins franchise as a spy or something. It's just amazing what, you know, he's done. But he's definitely not one for managing a ball club, you know, not at that top rating anyway. It's just bizarre. But
I'll be interested to see if he gets a job as an offensive coordinator or a QB coach again, because I think he's got talent, but he has no interpersonal skills. That's his problem. He doesn't seem to be able to manage people.
I think the coordinator is the way to go. I mean, we've seen coaches who've been, you know, head coaches, and you just think there's no way back for them now. I mean, I look at sort of the Falcons last season. You know, they got rid of their coach. He's obviously not suited to being a head coach. But obviously, going back, you know, towards the season then, so you have the baptism of fire against the Rams. You passed the test in a way. Okay, you didn't have the most productive game. I think it was like 91 yards and a touchdown. He was only sacked once, although that was Aaron Donald, you know, so welcome to the NFL. But you obviously went on a bit of a run then. You know, you go ahead, you beat the Cardinals, you beat the Chargers, you know, and you're kind of looking like you've got the bit between you in terms of getting into a playoff run. You had a win against the Jets as well, and then the Bengals. At that point then, did you think, what were your sort of initial feelings towards the season? Did you think, yes, the playoffs is a realistic aim, or did you at that point, because there were times when Tua shown that he was struggling, that it was time to maybe make that change again, or do you think it was right just keeping Tua in throughout the whole season?
No, once we changed. Simple as that. I think, you know, we all know that Fitzmagic had a 2-year contract. He wanted to be a starting quarterback. He didn't want as a but was quite happy at a point to become, to sit behind Tua. He knew it was coming. Draft pick, and they want their money's worth out of it. See, I was surprised at the change, especially in the Raiders game. Obviously, I'm pleased that the way it happened, but you know, I was surprised that they benched Tua for a period of time. But from what I'm reading now and seeing now, and you know, I'm gonna stick up for the kid to say, like, you know, no OTAs, no mini camps, no. You know, the COVID situation. I know everybody went through it, and all the quarterbacks last year who were drafted went through it, blah, 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 blah. But it's not easy. It's not easy to, is it? You know, I mean, the kid's now had another full season. I don't know whether you've seen any pictures of him. That boy is beefed. His arms are looking, he's looking strong. Yeah. The reports are he is strong. The reports are he's obviously, we'll get onto that about new receivers and things. But, you know, it was a learning curve. And towards the end, he got better. So, you know, I'll say the Raiders game was a bit of an anomaly. And to be honest, as you said, with the Bills, we had to beat the Bills. And that was not going to happen. And I still think that's part of the problem for the next season. But as a whole, happy. Really happy with the way things eventually turned out.
You kind of touched on it, Martin, as well, but I'd say that the other thing with Tua is I think he got tired. Like, you look at the Cardinals game, he looked fantastic.
Yeah.
There are parts of that game where he looked absolutely amazing. But as you say, it's not just the OTAs and stuff. His whole preseason was rehab.
Yeah.
All it was about rehabbing the hip. He didn't get to work on much else. So, as you said, people who dislike Tua, and I know they're out there, will say we're making excuses, and maybe we are, but this is the year for him. And I don't want to pile on pressure that's already there anyway, but now he's had a full off season. Now he's got his weapons. Now, whatever, people are going to be, those people who dislike him are going to have more pressure on him. But, and the people like us who people say are making excuses for him are going to have to put up and shut up. But I think you can't ignore what he went through.
Yeah. Alabama. I mean,
I think he is on a bit of a hot seat. You know, and we said there's no smoke without fire. The whole Deshaun Watson scenario will have been played out probably by the sort of, well, whenever it takes, with legal bits and pieces, how long that takes. But you can't tell me there's no smoke without fire and Miami weren't looking at Deshaun Watson. You cannot tell me that. They were definitely at some point, if the option was there and the situation was right. I don't like it, but I think they would have taken, I think they would have gone for Watson.
I was just saying, organizations are becoming impatient now. I mean, you look at obviously what the Cardinals did, you know, with Josh Rosen. Quarterbacks aren't given that opportunity they were, you know, once upon a time, like a Green Bay who would, you know, sit Aaron Rodgers behind an experienced QB. It just doesn't happen anymore, does it? It's, you're literally given the best part of an
opportunity. If you don't have that luxury, obviously.
Yeah.
You know? You know, the Patriots, all right, they had the luxury of having, you know, Garoppolo behind. And then, you know, but then there's too much. People need that, you know, star QB too much. And, you know, there's not many teams that can afford to have a quarterback sit behind the number one for a long period of time. And then without moving, first of all, without one, they want to start themselves. Two, otherwise they're going to move them on and get something more for them. But as you said, it is a win now league. It is now. You know, people don't want to wait 2-3 years. The Dolphins obviously have. I think Mr. Ross has been amazing as an owner. He's seen exactly as Tom has said, all the mess that we've been in the past, and said, right, let's bring it back to basics. Let's do what we're going to do. You know, let's thank you so much, the Texans, by the way. Well, I love you for all those lovely, lovely draft picks we got. You know, it's build again, and it now has to work. It has to work. To a hot seat, 100%. He's got this year to play well.
Yeah.
But I think he will, fingers crossed.
Yeah. I think the one advantage he's got possibly for Tua this year, obviously Deshaun Watson's another conversation, and I guess Aaron Rodgers as well. But I have to say, I mean, I know you guys did a show on it, did your college show on it, but I'm not a massive fan of this 2022 draft class. And I think Tua might get an extra year just because of that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean,
yeah. Aaron Rodgers, though. Oh.
And the thing is, you're not getting the first pick in the draft either next year. So, you know, other than looking at maybe someone like Spencer Rattler, there's not going to be anyone there for Miami unless you sort of take up so many pieces. And really, I think you can build so much more around Tua. Like you say, you've got the offensive line, you've got the receivers now that are going to, you know, certainly provide, you know, that team with so many weapons. So there's so many ways you can go in the draft now. And I think Miami as a whole are doing a sensible thing in terms of how they are going about their recruitment, you know. But obviously looking at recruitment now, free agency, what were your guys' initial thoughts on free agency, you know, just prior to the draft? Obviously a number of key additions to that roster, one being obviously Will Fuller. You got another backup in Jacoby Brissett. You know, you had a great time, you know, stable time, should I say, at the Colts. You know, can certainly do the business. You had Matt Skura, you mentioned, the center, Malcolm Brown. So building on offense there, and obviously your existing defense as well. What were some of your favorite signings, Tom, in the free agency?
A little bit of an under the radar. Well, I don't know how under the radar is, but Adam Butler, I'm a big fan of, from the Patriots. Oh, yeah. I mean, I know we lost Devon, who, you know, you don't like to lose your homegrown guys, but I think the money he was going to be looking at, I guess it wasn't going to stay. Look at what he got from the Patriots. We got Butler a lot cheaper than that, and he offers maybe not the same on the run, but a lot more pass rush. I think the other one I was quite happy with, again, they're quite low key, but Justin Coleman, yeah. Just because I think Nick Needham, as much as he's been an amazing undrafted free agent story, and we all love the story, is he good enough to be our starting slot corner? You know, maybe, you know, Javon Holland might step in there, and, you know, when they start moving around a bit. But I think you need a competition at that spot really badly for us in that secondary. And I think Coleman provides like really good experience, really good depth there, if nothing else. So I'd say Butler and Coleman, maybe not as exciting as some of the other ones people will mention, but I was really happy with those two.
Fair enough. In terms of the players you lost, Martin, obviously, but most notably, Kyle Van Noy was a player you lost in free agency. There was Shaq Lawson, Eric Flowers. Anyone in particular there that you think is going to be a massive miss for the organization?
I think Bobby McCain is, but there's the total money issue, and I understand that, and I'm sure he understood it. I think he was so ingrained in the Miami Dolphins. I think McCain's going to be a massive loss as a personality. But the business of the NFL says that he had to go. I think that the Kyle Van Noy thing, again, a shame, but again, it's cash. So that's the wonderful thing about having a salary cap, that you can't keep everyone all the time. And from what I saw of Kyle Van Noy when he was playing was, you know, the major difference is they haven't let many go of great significance. I mean, I think bringing in Fuller is, I know it's a bit easy to say, but as a wide receiver, I think that's great. You know, I mean, his stats said it all, 879 yards and 8 touchdowns in 11 games. But stay fit, stay away from performance-enhancing drugs, and you'll be fine.
So, you know, it's all ifs, all if.
Yeah, a lot. But,
the outs were fine, really. There was no one there. I was going, apart from Fitz, but we knew it was happening. There was no one there, and that was heart, not head. Yeah. You know, I wasn't going, oh no, that's terrible. You know, it's just okay. It's business. You know, so.
I think, as you say as well, I think you look at the ones we lost. Van Noy was cut. We made that call. McCain was cut. We made that call. Flowers was traded. We made that call. Yeah, they were vets. Yeah. Yeah, they played roles. And yeah, in the case of Bobby, who was a great communicator on that back end, a real leader of the team. And you never like to see your own guys go. But I think, yeah, you know, I think the fact that we made the decisions, not, you know, it wasn't free agency necessarily. It was cuts we decided to make. I think that says a lot about the organisation.
Yeah. Mm. And obviously, we want to talk about the elephant in the room, you know, which has been sort of long going for months now. The saga between the Dolphins and Xavier Howard, obviously a great talent. You know, I mean, a number of teams I can imagine would be interested in his services. He's been a, you know, fantastic player over the course of the last few years. Well, what are your feelings towards that whole situation between Howard and the Dolphins? Can you understand it from his perspective, or do you think it's just another typical player, just, you know, being unreasonable?
Let's put this in the real world. If you were doing your job and you were good at your job and someone offered you more money for it somewhere else, you're going to go. But because you're a player on a team, you're supposed to be loyal. Now, I am not saying whether it's right or wrong, but that's the bottom line. It's a business. He's an employee of that company and he signed a contract. Yes, I know he signed a contract for X amount of years, but there's also the production level. His production level was amazing last year. So maybe from the Dolphins' point of view, restructure his contract, but make it performance related, not just bottom line money.
Yeah.
Then it's worth keeping. Otherwise, I'll see you later. From the Dolphins' perspective. Now, there's a difference, you know. If I was in Xavier Howard's shoes, who knows? I don't know. I've never had that sort of money. I don't know what I'd do. You know, people say you've got too much, but if you break it down into that working pattern, you know, that's what I'm trying to say. New job, you're going to go for more money. And that's basically what it is. But yeah, people see loyalty because they see their team and don't like it. But I don't want to upset anyone. So you got there's two sides to the coin.
Yeah, I guess
100% the coin. 100% agree. But sorry, Sue, on you.
No, I was just going to say, I think it also depends on which organisation he's looking to go to. Whether it, you know, if there aren't many team better in the situation, I think, than Dolphins right now in terms of, you know, being in there for a playoff contention. So we've got a real narrow list, in my opinion, as well, of clubs who can, you know, sort of afford him, number one, and number two, actually be someone who's going to actually contend for a division title and run in the playoffs. And I think from a Dolphins perspective, I think it's actually a decent place to go to now, where it hasn't been for the best part of a decade. And that's no sort of disrespecting anyone. I think that's just reality, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think what Martin said is true. There's two sides to this, and I understand both sides. X has just come off. Like, for me, he was defensive player of the year. Like, Aaron Donald did what Aaron Donald does, you know, but he wasn't as good as he'd been the previous 2 years. X was better than Gilmore was the year before for me and should have been DPOY. That's probably home bias, but it is what it is. And from his point of view, he should be paid as one of the top corners of the league, if not the top corner. But the way his deal was structured, he's now barely inside the top 10 in new money. So he thinks he deserves more. And he's 28 years old. He's probably got this one big contract left in him.
Yeah.
And he's going to fight for it. And I 100% understand that. But as Martin said, from Miami's point of view, yes, he signed this deal 2 years ago, but that was a signing bonus in the last year of his rookie deal. He's 1 year into a five-year deal where, you know, maybe it's not the case anymore, but at the time he had one healthy 16 game season and you made him the highest paid cornerback in football and he didn't have any complaints then. And his agent negotiated the deal. He signed the deal. No one put a gun to his head. Do you know what I mean? It's difficult because I can understand both sides of it. I don't want to lose Xavier Howard. I think he is our best player on that roster. Full stop. He just is. But at the same time, I don't think if Miami folds and gives him the money he's asking for, it sets such a dangerous precedent.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you there, Tom. What we're going to do now, guys, we're just going to take a bit of a break and obviously come back in for the second part where we discuss the draft and the up and coming season. Welcome back, guys, for the second part of our 4th and Inches franchise edition with the Miami Dolphins. So just to go into the draft now, obviously the draft, you know, the Miami Dolphins had a number of picks in this particular draft. Obviously went with a wide receiver in Jalen Waddle with the first pick. Martin, what were your sort of initial thoughts about Jalen Waddle? We'll go to Tom for this one.
Mate, I'll be honest, Waddle was absolutely my wide receiver one. I know a lot of people will disagree with that, and I know a lot of people love Chase.
Yeah.
But Waddle's just electric. I mean, if you could have given me any two players in round one, it would have been Waddle and Phillips, the Jalen brothers. They're just exactly what this team needs. We need one-on-one pass rush wins. Jalen Phillips has it in spades. We needed speed, and Waddle has that like nothing I've ever seen. I just think that as much as people are going to want, you know, talk about Kyle Pitts or talk about, you know, I had, you know, nice dreams about 13 personnel and mismatches with him and Gesicki. I just think Waddle is exactly what we needed. And I don't see how anyone can argue with it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he plays the game.
I agree.
Such.
Got to agree, 100%.
Yeah.
It's putting the old team back together, isn't it? So, I mean, yes, we'd have taken Pitts. There's no ifs or buts about it if he'd have been there. He was never dropping that far. They weren't going to go up any further. The position we're in is I think it's fantastic with Tua back with his old teammate.
Yeah, 100%. And Tom, obviously going into, you know, later on in the draft, you just mentioned Jalen Phillips. A lot of people obviously know about his story as well. He's had his issues with injuries and coming back, but to play for obviously the same city as where you played your college ball, like, it must be a great feeling for him as well. Being part of that city again.
Yeah, he said as much as well. I know a lot's been made of the injuries, and it was more concussions, obviously, at UCLA, which is why he was forced into a medical retirement due to concussion protocols. And there's also been a lot of, you know, reports about him and Chip Kelly having issues and him essentially falling out of love with the game, and, you know, how Hurricanes kind of brought him back in, you know, got him back in love with the game and brought him back to football. And I'm sorry, like, don't get me wrong, I was a big fan of Micah Parsons, but obviously not playing last year hurt him a little bit. And I think if you watch any college football last year, there's no doubt in my mind that Jalen Phillips was the best defensive football player in college football last year, and we got him at 18. That's insane value. And on top of that, you look at when was it, 2017, massively overdrafting Charles Harris just because we needed a pass rusher.
Yeah,
you know, we've got a guy who's 50 times that player, and we've got him at 18, and we didn't have to, you know, manipulate the board in any way. We just sat and took the best player we could, and it's exactly what we needed, and I couldn't be happier.
Exactly. And then to go in the second round, and I'm actually, don't know if you guys know, I'm a Ducks fan, so Javon Holland is certainly someone I, you know, had my eye on in terms of who would draft him. And obviously, you know, he went to obviously your Dolphins there at pick number 36 in the second round. What are your initial thoughts on Javon Holland there, you know, as the safety prospect out of Oregon?
I mean, it was, I'll be honest, the year before, I was big into DBs, and I was banging the drum for Antoine Winfield. I was banging the drum for Jeremy Chinn. I was banging the drum for Justin Blackmon, and all three turned out to be studs.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely devastated. And Holland wasn't, to be honest, mainly because he opted out last year, didn't he? So I missed a big chunk of him playing, and I've only recently caught up with him. So he wasn't massively on my radar. I didn't think we'd go safety.
Yeah, other options.
But I do think he's, from what I've seen on his tape, he seems to be, and the reports at training camp or the OTAs are that he's possibly could be the steal of this draft for us. Like, he's He seems to be picking things up really quick. They're putting more and more on his plate. Sounds like he's going to replace Bobby as a single high role to start off with. And then I think they're just going to put more and more on his plate because he seems to be able to take it. So, yeah, again, not a player I knew that much about, but from what I've heard and what I've seen since.
It's interesting because from the safety standpoint, you had you had Richie Grant. There was a couple of options there that they could have gone with. So I'm not going to say that I thought, you know, trying not to be biased, I didn't think Javon Holland would go above them, but at the end of the day, they obviously feel that he's going to fit into their scheme. Another player that I really enjoy watching in college last year was Hunter Long, the tight end. I know we've missed that. Obviously, in between that, you've also drafted Liam Eikenberg as well out of Notre Dame. But tell us, now that we're talking about the offense, tell us your thoughts about Hunter Long as well as a tight end prospect, Tom.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think if you watched him play last year, you understand why they liked him. I'll be honest, I was shocked. Like, he was not the guys I was looking at. I was looking at, you know, running backs at that point, if I'm honest. And, you know, it doesn't bode well for guys like Durham Smythe on the roster, who maybe is going to get pushed out now. We're really going to, you know, Adam Shaheen came in and signed a new contract. You know, we've obviously got Mike, who's in a contract year, Mike Gesicki. You know, it doesn't bode well very well for the guys at the bottom end of the roster. I imagine Hunter Long won't be that heavily involved early on. He's a more traditional style tight end who does a little bit of everything. Yeah. And I think possibly towards the end of the season, we'll see him more and more. As I said, that one came out of left field for me completely. And obviously, he was Boston College, isn't he? So he's a guy that Coach Flores would have loved.
In terms of the running back position, you just mentioned there that, you know, with obviously the Dolphins not really drafting until very late in Jared Doakes. Are you surprised that the Dolphins didn't sort of look at the running back position earlier in the draft? And do you think the guys you have on in the running back position are equipped to, you know, do the job?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy with the way it's gone with Malcolm Brown coming in. I think obviously Najee Harris would have been a nice, but when you had Phillips there, at the same, more or less the same, you know, to take him as rusher, as you said, took him, is superb. Couldn't have done any better than that, really.
Yeah, I mean, again, I was looking around that 80-odd state. Was who I was looking at as a possible running back option at that point. Was it Trey Sermon? Trey Sermon was who I was looking at as an option at that point. But yeah, I mean, the Dolphins obviously decided to go a certain way. You look at the picks they made. Miles Gaskin, people might not think he's a number one running back, but the dude was a seventh rounder and he was on course for nearly 1,000 yards last season. You know, all purpose yards from scrimmage. You know, if he hadn't have been hurt, he had how many 100-yard games? Like in all purpose yards, he's done a job. And if you watch Cincinnati last year in college football, they were a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and they had a lot of draft eligible players who went to a lot of places. You know, and a lot of people are going to be talking about Desmond Ridder next year, but yeah, I think Doakes, you know, he's one of those kind of under the radar guys who I'd watched a little bit of, and I wouldn't have minded a seventh round or UDFA punt on. I think that yeah, he could be fun. He gives something a bit different to that room. You know, maybe as a backup to Malcolm Brown long term, but I do actually have faith in Gaskin. I like him a lot. You know, you look at what he did at college, and you look at what he managed to do last season with an O line that hadn't really gelled. And a lot was put on his plate, and if he can stay healthy, I think that seems to be the way the Dolphins are going. And they're not gonna be, you know, yeah, I'd love to have got a Jonathan Taylor, I'd love to have got a Najee Harris, I'd love to have got, you know, most Dolphins fans were Dobbins last year. I'm sure, most Dolphins fans would say that, but I'm not sure that's what Greer and Flores have in mind.
Yeah, but I mean, as you said, I was quite happy with that. Quite happy. You know, I would have quite liked Najee Harris, but with Phillips available at the same spot, whether they're going to take him more or less, I think that's more important.
Yeah,
100%. Positional value obviously matters to this team, and you know, getting a stud pass rusher is way more important to us than getting a stud running back. And I think anyone who's building a team would agree with that.
Yeah, 100%. It's so hard to get a good pass rusher compared to, you know, a running back. Like you say, you can find them in later on in the draft, even free agency. I mean, you look at obviously the Jags last year with Robinson. You know, the Denver Broncos did it with Phillip Lindsay once upon a time, you know, who obviously had a 1,000-yard rushing season. So you can get a really top running back. But Trey Sermon was a good call for me. I mean, he went to the 49ers, I believe. So he was definitely someone I would have thought they would have gone maybe beyond sort of earlier prior to the seventh round. But then sometimes I think a lot of it is also to do with COVID as well. They said the way teams were looking at players, they were sort of more cautious in terms of instead of just throwing darts around, you know, which is understandable. But let's discuss the up and coming schedule for the season. Obviously, training camp now is only a few weeks away. So looking at obviously the schedule now, we've got the extra game this year. You start off quite similar to where you were last year. You got the Patriots the opening game. Then you've got the Bills, you know, two division matchups to start off with. What are your overall thoughts on the schedule? And obviously, you know, the potential of obviously the Dolphins coming to the UK. Obviously, I don't want to jinx anything because, you know, how things just keep changing.
Yeah.
You know,
you look at the schedule, right? And by having a bye week in week 14, brilliant, right? That's the first thing I looked at when I saw this schedule, the bye week, right? Late bye week, then playing the Jets the week after the bye. We'll come back to the rest of it. So it's the run in where it could be quite hard. We should be in a position, you know, in a good position by then. But going back to the start of it, I think the Patriots are beatable now. I don't think they're anywhere near the force they were. We've got film on Cam Newton now, which we didn't have last year, as Tom already said. That second week game at home against Buffalo, that could be key to the whole of the rest of the season, whichever way that game goes. Personally, I think we'll lose. I think we lose that game. But that's just, I'm just looking at where they are and where we are. Yeah. You know, then away in Las Vegas, that could go either way. I think we could win it. Colts at home, a win. You're going to like the next one though. But when we play Tampa Bay, I just don't see that happening. Yeah. I see that as our second loss, and then come to London. Hopefully, obviously things seem to be still on track. Hope they stay on track. Hope they do. And we will win that. I'm going to sound really arrogant. We're going to win that because we're not playing the Wembley, so we can't lose. I think
I'm looking at the schedule.
Back on.
I honestly think the Dolphins can. I think there's no reason why you can't not only get to double figures in terms of your wins, but even maybe 12, 13 wins.
I've got down 12 wins.
Yeah.
12.
I think Martin's kind of nailed it for us. I think a little bit, the beginning of the season is going to be key. We can't be starting 1-3 again. You know, we can't start that. That cost us the end of last year. You know, you go into the, you know, yeah, there are games like Denver where people will say, oh, we shouldn't have, you know, we lost that game. We shouldn't have done, etc. But Vic Fangio is a damn good coach, and I think he figured Tua out in that game. But I think those first few games, Patriots and Bills, the worst we can go is 1-1. As Martin said, I do think Josh Allen's got our number at the moment, and that's something we need to figure out in the division. But we can't start the season 1-3, 1-4, or anything like that if we want to be taken seriously as postseason contenders, and that's what we should be. I kind of have us around 11, 12 wins as well. I think it's realistic for us. It's not an easy schedule, but the back end of it, as Martin alluded to, is favourable for us. Yeah. Getting through those first 6-7 weeks is going to be hard, but once we get through that, the back end of it does look good for a playoff push. But we need to make a decent start. We can't be like those Patriots teams a few years ago who started slow and then hoped to steamroll. We need to get a couple of wins off on the board early.
Yeah, 100%. And obviously, if you are in a situation that you get into the playoffs, I mean, let's talk about your division just briefly. Do you see the Dolphins winning the division, or is it still the Bills? Then, like you mentioned, obviously you think the head-to-head will get one way with the Bills, but do you see the Dolphins challenging for, you know, the AFC East on this occasion?
As I said, and this, people may think American, I see us beating New England and the Jets both home and away, but I also see the Bills doing exactly the same. So it's going to come down to our games against them. Now, what's quite nice is that we are playing in Buffalo in sort of end of October. So it's not as cold as it, you know, as December. And I was there in December and it's freezing. So it's not quite as, for those little snowflakes down in Miami to have to go up there. So, but that's the key. I think the key is going to come down to two games, us playing Buffalo home and away. And if we can nick one of them, I mean, we'd be amazing if in week two, in a hot, sticky September Miami afternoon, that we go and beat the Bills, then we're on a roll from there.
Yeah, wear our whites and chuck them in that sun on the other side.
100%. They'll be in those lovely, lovely blue kits right in the middle of the sunshine at 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, sweating their little Bills off. it's still Josh Allen, though, isn't it? You know, he's class, and he's a class quarterback. They're a class team. They're a class outfit. Even if they are losers, but you know, it's they are class, and they will win the division, I think. And I think I'd even put them close to being Super Bowl contenders, close to it this year.
Yeah, you've got to be looking at the Bills as AFC champions. We can't be arrogant enough to say we can't beat them.
No,
until we can beat them consistently, we can't be arrogant enough to say we're gonna contend for the division. And I think that at the moment, they're what we're looking up to. They're a couple of years ahead in their rebuild, and there's something to aspire to. Because as you say, McDermott's done an incredible job there, and Billy Bean done an incredible job there, kind of what they've built. Brandon Bean, sorry, but have done an incredible job in what they've built. And they've drafted well. You look at what they drafted this year, everyone's like, oh, they didn't really get much. But that's because they're getting to that Ravens point where they're drafting 2 years into the future. They're drafting what they're going to need next year, the year after. Usually you look at teams drafting to try and win their division. They're past that now. They're looking at how can they beat the Chiefs. They're looking at how can they beat, you know, kind of the Bucks, those kind of things, you know, and that might help us, you know, because now we're still drafting to how and looking for players and how we can win our division. And they're looking beyond. So hopefully they get complacent, but I don't think you can look beyond the Bills for the AFCs without being delusional, to be honest.
Yeah, and to be fair, I personally don't think we're that far off, if I'm being honest. I mean, you see the NFL, there's going to be injuries in training camp. I mean, we just talked off air about the Rams and Cam Akers. It just takes one position, you know, Josh Allen to go down, and it can work the other way. Obviously, we hope it doesn't, touch wood. But things can just certainly unravel quickly in the NFL. And, you know, it will just take one thing and the Dolphins will probably, you know, could be looking, you know, looking up. So
it could work both ways, though. You know, you assume that Josh Allen isn't going to play as incredibly as he did last year. Everything worked for him, but so there's going to be a slight regression. Is he going to be as good as he was last year? There might be a slight regression, but it works for us as well. Are we really going to get that many turnovers? Are our special teams really going to be that good? You know, you've kind of got to
look in it. Yeah, definitely. And you've seen Josh Allen even in the playoffs. He has had issues sometimes mentally, been able to, you know, when under pressure. So it could be that teams have, you know, obviously done their research this year, and it might be a case that, you know, maybe his stats won't be as good as last year, you know. When it comes to maybe, you know, the rushing touchdowns that he was getting last year as well, I think a lot of teams are now wary of, you know, that sort of dual threat, and that they're going to use the running backs a lot less, aren't they? So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how that sort of pans out. But you know, I want to thank you guys for, you know, joining us today. It's been, we could have talked for a lot longer, but you know, unfortunately the sun is out, and you know, I'm sure you want to get a bit of a tan after work, don't you, there? So just want you guys to obviously, you know, plug any social media that you guys may have and use, so our listeners can maybe, you know, give you guys a follow. So start off with yourself, Tom.
I'm going to be 100% honest. I have no idea what my Twitter handle is. No one follows me. No one cares what I think.
What we will do though is we'll put it on the description of the podcast anyway, so no worries if you don't know it at the minute. It's just, you know, I'm sure we'll be able to find you. How about yourself then, Martin?
Twitter, where I use it, is at Martin Liddon. But more importantly is we run the obviously the Miami Dolphins fan club, Fins Nation UK, run by my very, very good friend Wayne Collard. Obviously the good work that he does for charity, the more the merrier. It's Facebook page, just go on there, especially if you're a Dolphins fan. Look up what we do. We try and have meetups and stuff. Big one coming up, obviously the Finvasion in October. Fingers crossed, October 17th. Massive raffle. Unbelievable prizes, which you two know one of the prizes, and it's a money can't buy prize, as you know. And we give all the money to various charities every year. So the one to look at really is Fins Nation UK on Facebook. That's the number one.
Fantastic, Martin. Really appreciate that, guys. And thanks again for coming on, and wish the Dolphins the best of luck in the AFC. Obviously, AFC East, and, you know, just in the AFC as a whole. And hopefully we'll meet in the Super Bowl, being all Florida Super Bowl, because it's not saying you're not going to be the Jags, is it?
And we do love playing Brady in Florida.
Yeah. Well, it's in LA.
Yeah, except the Super Bowl's in LA. Step on, help us.
Exactly. Bright lights. He's a California kid.
Brilliant.
It's coming home. But thanks a lot, guys. Yeah. Much appreciated. Much appreciated, guys. And, you know, wish you all the best, you know, in all seriousness. Thank you.
Cheers. Cheers, boys.